Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for December 18th, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you tonight? And good evening,
great,
everyone. Tonight we will continue our discussion about the developments in the VA. You know, last week we reviewed legislation passed by Congress and signed into law during 2017, and it was a pretty active year for Congress, and it shows that they're trying to do their, I guess, in their minds, their best for our veterans, although there is some criticism to be had about some of the legislation that they did pass, and we're just going to have to wait and see how it all develops. The proof is in the pudding. Tonight, we will continue with our discussion with more developments in veteran issues. Our previously scheduled guest for tonight was Mike Partain. Unfortunately, Mike is battling the flu. I spoke to him earlier tonight, and he wanted to give it the old college try, but in our pre-interview, he was really having a tough time coughing still, and so hopefully he'll start getting better, and we look forward to having Mike on our show on January the 8th. He'll be discussing Camp Lejeune and the contamination water of the drinking water issue. His group is called The Few, The Proud, and The Forgotten, and Mike and his group have been very, very active in Congress, going up to D.C. and doing what they can to help our veterans. I want to first remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call number is 1-888-627-6008. And I want to remind everyone that this is the Veterans News Hour. This is not David's show. This isn't my show. This is the Veterans Show. We're the messengers. We're trying to get be a voice for all of our veterans to discuss all the issues that concern them, whether you were involved in the Vietnam War or any subsequent wars since then. We want to encourage our younger veterans from the Iraqi and Afghanistan conflicts to get active with the VA, go out and get your compensation that you're entitled to, call in and talk to us about your cases, and let us see how we can help you. But at this point, I'm going to turn it back over to David. How you doing, David?
Good, good. It's been another busy week. You know, last week we talked about some of the key legislation passed by Congress and signed into law so far in 2017, and you know, a lot of bipartisanship, interestingly enough. For those that may have missed the show, if you're interested in listening to our discussion, our summary of those key legislation laws that were passed over the last year, you can find our archived podcast of the show from last week on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Tonight, we'd like to discuss several recent news reports issued by the VA, along with some ongoing issues, which will likely receive further attention in the next year, probably the next couple years. The first is the VA's new claims program called the Decision Ready Claims Program, Decision Ready Claims Program, or the DRC program. What's interesting, you know, Richard and I have talked a good bit and have had a number of guests on our show over the last 11 months that talked about what was first pending legislation and then eventually enacted legislation to so-called modernize the VA appeals claims appeal system. Well, the VA for a while now, and really put into motion last month, is this new Decision Ready Claims Program, which is really not part of the legislation. It's a VA initiative where they're trying to address veterans' complaints that their initial claims are not being processed fast enough. So the thinking behind this is they'll come up with this program that has certain requirements, and if the veteran and the veteran's representative, a veteran service officer, can meet the requirements as far as the documentation and then certify that their claim is ready for this decision-ready program, that the VA will then promise to make a relatively prompt decision. I've read some VA statements saying that their goal is a 30-day turnaround, a 30-day decision upon the submission of a claim that has been certified as decision-ready. Now, we're going to talk more about what this program involves because some of you may not be surprised to learn that it's rather complicated as far as what claims are allowed, which claims are excluded from this program, and what a veteran and a veteran service officer has to do to meet the requirements. So,
David, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I was talking to a veteran earlier today, and we were talking about the decision-ready claims program, and I know you've been doing a lot of research on it and looking into it. And one of the questions that he proposed to me was, is it only limited to the veteran and a veteran service officer?
Well, it is.
Does he have to use the veteran service officer, or can he? If he has an attorney, is he barred?
Well, if you follow the letter of the guidance that the VA has put out so far, it has to be an accredited veteran service organization, and you know, you and I are both accredited by the VA. We're lawyers. We're accredited lawyers to represent veterans and veteran family members and disability and other VA-type claims. But you and I have received nothing from the VA, even though we're accredited by the VA. We've received nothing as far as direct information or any training programs, you know, as lawyers for this program. And, in fact, the VA information that's on the VA website specifically talks about veteran service organizations, which would be, for instance, the American Legion, the VFW, Disabled American Veterans. Those are three of the largest, most well-known organizations. So it also bars veterans from representing themselves. If they think that they have a relatively simple claim, they're not allowed to qualify for this decision-ready claims program, just trying to do it themselves.
Getting back to on that again, this veteran and I, when we were talking about it, because he finally got so fed up with the veteran service officer that's why he turned around and hired an attorney to help him. And he not only was he getting fed up, but he felt like the veteran service officer throughout the entire process had been dismissing his claim and basically telling him, you don't have a claim. So rather than encouraging him and being part of the team like you and I always do with our vets and trying to get them, you know, to stay in the boat and don't worry, we're going to cross the line with you, he had to walk away from his veteran service officer. So it would seem to me that, I don't know, I'm a little suspicious that the VA would put all the baggage right onto the VSO, and is that really going to benefit our vets?
Well, I think one concern that I have about the program, and basically the purpose of the program is this, that if a veteran's potential claim fits within the parameters of this program, and I can talk more about that, and I will shortly, because it's more complicated than one might think. But if their potential claim fits within the boundary lines of this program, they have to get a veteran service organization. They have to then gather all the relevant medical records, personnel records, medical exam, a VA claims exam, which many veterans know typically as a compensation and pension or C&P exam. And within this program, it's very likely that the veteran will find that they're seeing a contracted physician, someone that is not a VA doctor, but someone that's been contracted, works for a company that the VA has contracted with to do these exams. We've already seen some of our clients, as you know, Richard. But the point of it is that under this decision-ready claims program, the veteran and his or her representative have to do all the preparation, including the VSO, the Veterans Service Officer, scheduling this medical exam, getting the report. They have to compile all the stuff before they file a claim. Well, what does that tell you? It tells you that it looks like the VA is trying to push all the work and all the responsibility and its duty, legal duty to assist that currently exists in the law, they're trying to push all that onto the veteran and the veteran service officers, all right, make them do all the work and have all the responsibility for either a strong case or what might turn out to be a flawed claim that has problems with it. But not only that, but it raises a question of what's the effective date, because, you know, it sounds like, just from the guidance that the VA has put out, that the effective date will be when they file the claim, which is normally the case, although, you know, it's been a complicated area of VA law over the years as far as what is an intent to file a claim, or if they're filing a potential claim or notice of intent to file a claim. It gets really complicated and get into a gray area very quickly. But the way the VA guidance is written, that claim is submitted once they've done all the preparation that the VA is usually supposed to be directing and overseeing and ensuring gets accomplished under their duty to assist. So not only is it putting all the work on the veteran and the VSO, but it's also, it looks to me, that they are essentially costing the veteran a later effective date for the start of compensation, you know, which is a big thing. I mean, if the veteran, let's say the veteran is 100% disabled and the claim is granted for 100%, for a single veteran without dependents, that's close to $3,000 a month. So if they had to delay 6 months or 9 months as they were doing all this preparation that the VA usually does after a claim is filed, and their effective date isn't until they filed this already fully documented claim, you know, that could cost them, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, literally. So that's my major concern about it. And, again, it's a relatively new system. The VA started publicizing it just fairly recently, and in another press release from this past Tuesday, less than a week ago, December the 12th, they've indicated they're already trying to expand the decision-ready claims program to include more types of claims. But even then, the list of excluded claims is very, very long. So here's the snag. Veterans are going to hear about this program. They're going to hear about the VA bragging about the program, how they've got this new decision-ready claims program, that they'll pretty close to promise a decision within 30 days after the claim is filed. But they don't realize the much greater burden placed on the veteran and the veteran's veteran service officer to fully prepare the claim. And that could take months as they get records, as they, you know, get the medical exam, they prepare other documents that they need. So those are my thoughts.
You know, David,
go ahead,
I see that there's, I don't know, I call it false hope. You know, there's a lot out there that the Congress has done over this past year. And when I'm talking to some veterans, you know, they're not taking the time to read all the different legislation like you and I are, and reading between the lines and really seeing what all these new this new legislation is going to do or not do, or the problems it may continue to cause. But I'm just concerned that there's this false hope out there that, there's all this new stuff and it's going to get better. And unfortunately, I don't see it that way. But we'll see. Again, proof's in the pudding. By the way, I think we've got a caller on, I think, Mike?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing? I know we're going to have you on in a couple of weeks, and we couldn't do the interview because you're not feeling well. I hope you're feeling better.
Yeah, I'm getting on the mend. It's been a
good
a holiday cold season, I guess.
So why don't you wet our whistle a little bit with what you'll be talking about on January the 8th with your group, Fear the Proud and Forgotten.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Camp Lejeune drinking water contamination that ran from 19... 1953 to 1987 and the poisoning of about a million Marines and their families. As you know, in January of this year, we won one of the largest presumptive service connections since Agent Orange for these veterans.
That's really awesome, and I know you and your group have done a lot of great work, and we're really looking forward to your appearance on the show. David and I have been talking about the Decision Ready Claims Program. Are you familiar with it at all?
No, I'm not. I was listening to some of the conversation. One of the things that I'd be interested in when we do talk is, with our issue we had in 2012. 15 named conditions that were granted limited medical care by the VA. And then, of course, this year we expanded to the presumptive service connections, but there's only 6 of those. So there is, it didn't encompass all conditions. And one of the problems that we're running into with our veterans is that they, like, for example, male breast cancer is one of the issues that is covered in the 2012 law, but is not a presumptive service connection. So if a veteran presents a claim for male breast cancer, it is on the burden is on them to connect the dots. And the VA, in our case, the VA inserted an extra step, which is called the Subject Matter Expert Program, where they're referring these claims out to an independent medical examiner, a lot of times a medical occupational specialist, that are writing up reviews for these claims that are almost for lack of a better word, they're unsurmountable for the veteran to get a favorable grant.
You know, Mike, I know you're not feeling well, so I won't keep you on much longer. But one of the things that I've, and the perspective that I come from is that the struggle for the average veteran to work the system. I see how difficult it is just from the attorney's perspective, and you're pretty smart guys, I like to think. But for the average veteran, it just seems like it's a huge hurdle, and you've got all this legislation coming at them. From what you've seen so far, is the system getting better? Are we just spinning our wheels? Or, how do you feel about it?
Well, with the subject matter expert program that I referred to earlier, it seems like it's getting more complicated. Like in one case here in Florida, we had a gentleman that his subject matter expert actually cut and pasted a passage out of Wikipedia, and then the VA turned around and denied his claim based on that. I don't know about you, but Wikipedia is not exactly the most scientific and medical thorough journal that I can use to either grant or deny a claim.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, I agree with you there, Mike.
David,
go ahead, Richard.
Have a quick question for Mike?
Well, it'll be interesting to have you on the show. We can talk more at length, Mike, and I sure hope you're feeling better soon.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope you all have a happy holiday, and I look forward to speaking with you on January 8th and also put the word out with our community. We may have some veterans that would like to maybe call in or have some questions for you, too.
That'd be wonderful. Awesome. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, y'all.
Merry Christmas.
Well, that should be pretty good, David. Looking forward
to having
Mike on
the show. To call in. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
the Decision Ready Claims Program, it can cover an expanded range of claims now, according to the VA's press release from last week, but it's still limiting or excluding kind of long list of types of claims still. And let me just give our listeners an idea of the kinds of claims which this decision-ready claims process will not cover. If you're waiting for a decision on a pending disability claim, if you've already filed one, in other words, they're not going to allow you to convert that into a decision-ready claims program. If you're currently appealing the condition you want to file a decision-ready claim for, I know, Richard, you and I have tried this strategy before, usually without success because the VA is just being a bureaucracy, which is we have a veteran filed a claim, got the claim either denied for service connection or a very low rating, and they file a notice of disagreement. They hire us to handle, to represent them on appeal, and then in some cases we've taken the strategy of, we'll pursue the appeal, We're also going to file a new supplemental claim for any number of reasons. It could be because the condition has worsened, or maybe it's a secondary, another secondary condition, or just to see if the VA will process that. The idea being that as slow as the VA is in many actions, usually they will adjudicate a new claim or a supplemental claim much, much faster than they'll process a claim that is in the post notice of disagreement stage, in other words, the first stage of an appeal. So we've tried that strategy, and in some early years, that actually worked, and that was the guidance by some organizations like the National Veterans Legal Services Program. But in more recent years, I've observed that the VA has started taking, at least especially the regional office that we deal with a lot in St. Petersburg, they take the kind of black and white approach, which is if the issue is on appeal, that's where it's staying until the appeals section gets to it, which we know is usually 3 or 4 years into the future after notice of disagreement. Well, you know, we've had some cases recently where, you know, we're checking on the status of our claims, and they tell us in the St. Petersburg office that they're working on appeals that were filed in 2013, you know, and 2014. And now we're a month away from 2018. So, but in any event, going back to this Decision Ready program, if it's an issue for filing for direct service connection for PTSD, traumatic brain injury, Camp Lejeune contaminated water, or conditions related to mustard gas or as a former prisoner of war, they've set aside those claims for now as not being capable of being under this program. You just have to use the regular program. And there is a long list of other ones, including claiming individual unemployability, which is a big issue. It's a way for veterans that are usually in the 60 to 90% rating to get an increase up to 100% based on their inability to hold substantial gainful employment. So those are some of the major things on the list. There are some other ones which you can find from the VA website. And it's a list that might change. Like I say, the VA just last week announced that they were expanding the list, and maybe they'll continue to do so as this program, you know, gets some traction and they see how it's actually working, for better or worse. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see if the VA is actually able to use this program to help veterans, or if they find that these cases are really not resulting in settled claims and they're just pushing cases into an appeal. But so basically my thought on the Decision Ready program, let's see how it works out, but it appears to me that it's shifting the VA's work and the obligations from itself to the veterans and the veteran service officers, and this may have some negative consequences for the veterans, as I've mentioned, and while it really only saves the VA some of its work and time. So, all right, welcome any callers' inputs, and if we have anyone from the VA that's listening or any veteran service officers that may have dealt with the Decision Ready Claims Program, please give us a call. Our toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. Give us a call. Meanwhile, Richard, I understand that you got some info for us on an issue affecting many veterans, which is traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. What can you tell us about that?
I sure do. According to a December 7th press release, the VA is now using two innovative treatments to ease the everyday challenges associated with living with traumatic brain injury, TBI, and post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. According to the press release, VA Secretary David Shulkin stated, "We know that for a small group of veterans, a traditional approach to healthcare may not be the most effective. This is particularly true with certain chronic medical and mental health conditions. For veterans who don't improve, we have to look for innovative, evidence-based approaches that may help them restore and maintain their health and well-being. Veterans with a history of mild to moderate TBI now have access to light-emitting diode, LED therapy contained in a lightweight frame that is placed on the head and a clip placed inside the nose. Results of some studies show that LED improves brain function, including attention and memory, emotions, and sleep. LED therapy has begun at the VA Boston Healthcare System, Jamaica Plain campus this month. LED also is available for veterans to use in their homes. Providers at the Long Beach VA Medical Center have begun using stellate ganglion block SGB to treat veterans with PTSD. Symptoms of SGB is safe and may ease PTSD symptoms such as feelings of anxiety, constantly being on alert. It involves an injection or shot of medication into the neck to decrease the symptoms of PTSD. VA remains a world leader in the development and use of innovative therapies such as telehealth, yoga, and other approaches to improve health and well-being. You know, one of the questions I had with regard to the SGB, and I haven't found an answer yet, is the talks about an injection or a shot of medication. Well, one of the things, David, you and I always deal with our PTSD clients is the medication, and oftentimes they talk about how the medication is sometimes as bad as the symptom of PTSD. So I'd like to kind of know what kind of medication they're going to be shooting into some of these veterans' necks before they start doing so. But that's one of the areas that the VA is proposing to help our PTSD veterans. And clearly it's something that needs to be addressed. Medication's not the answer, or at least for most of them, not the answer. I shouldn't say it's not the answer. But I deal with so many veterans who end up not taking medication. Because, like I said, the medication becomes worse than the actual symptom. And unfortunately, some of them also turn to excessive use of alcohol because they don't want to use the medication. So any effort to try to help our veterans with PTSD would be terrific. And we'll see what happens. Again, it's another one of those things where we just have to, we don't have a crystal ball, so we don't know how it's going to play out, but we'll be following it as we approach and go into year 2018.
Yep.
David, what do you have with regard to the Center for Compassion Innovation?
Yeah, that's an important VA program, the Center for Compassion Innovation. It's a program that the VA has where they're trying to explore new emerging therapies that may offer hope and help to veterans. And doing research about this program that they have and this Center for Compassion Innovation, it's kind of brought to mind a point that one of our guests back in October, filmmaker Rick Burns, had mentioned whenever he did his documentary on the VA. You may recall, our listeners may recall, that Rick, in giving the history of the VA healthcare system, really noted how intertwined the VA healthcare system is already with the medical training system in the United States. It's no coincidence that many VA medical centers or hospitals are co-located with university medical schools. And that was an intentional plan going back decades till after World War II, that time frame. It certainly expanded over the decades, where you had the VA hospitals being a training ground for residents, young physicians, but also not just being a training ground, but also being the locations, because of the close location with these university medical schools, to have access to some of the top experts in different medical specialties. And Richard, you and I have had clients that have received care in the VA facilities by doctors who are not full-time VA surgeons, but are located, you know, within medical schools or and other programs because of the really close relationship. The VA is both helping to train new generations of medical providers, but also getting the access, the expertise. And that's why the point I'm getting to is this VA Center for Compassion Innovation works closely with medical experts at different universities and medical schools and other institutions to explore new therapies. And the ones you've described, Richard, are just some of those. But I wanted to mention this VA Center for Compassionate Innovation in case any of our listeners are interested in learning more about it. If you happen to be in the medical field already or know someone that's in the medical field, and you may have some ideas that you think would be helpful to help veterans, to help them overcome physical disabilities, but also mental disabilities. They do have a website, which is va.gov/health-partnerships. That's the VA Center for Compassionate Innovation at va.gov/health-partnerships. And basically, as I said earlier, the VA established the Center for Compassionate Innovation as a starting point. They want to ensure that these innovations are safe and that they're ethical and that there's a chance of being successful in treating veterans, usually a subset of veterans that are diagnosed with specific conditions that are not responding to already evidence-based therapies. And some of the issues that they're focusing on right now that they find that have been somewhat resistant to standard treatments have included causes of suicide, rather high rate of suicide for veterans, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, which are things, some of the things you just mentioned, Richard, as well as chronic pain. So again, anyone that's interested in learning more about the Center for Compassionate Innovation, or if you're a medical provider or medical researcher and you have some ideas, check that out. They actively seek proposals for emerging therapies. And again, go to their website, which is va.gov/health-partnerships. And if you have an idea, see if your proposal fits the criteria, you know, that it's going to be a safe intervention, if you will, that it's clinical innovation, that it's a new idea, not yet fully evaluated perhaps, and that it'll have a clinical benefit, and it's something that can be used within the Veteran Health Administration. So it's an important program, and, you know, historically the VA has been on the cutting edge of a lot of things because of the types of injuries, both physical, traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injuries, as well as psychological injuries that veterans suffer in wartime. And, you know, we've been in war now constantly for the last 16 years, and a lot of veterans are suffering from some of the traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, some of the things that, particularly traumatic brain injury, that are more common because of the improvised explosive devices used in these wars. So, Richard, what are your thoughts? I've got more information to share, but before I continue, Richard, what are your thoughts?
I think you're right, David, about the VA historically has had success with innovative medical research and other medical programs to help veterans, which not surprisingly would then go into the civilian world and help our civilian people suffering from similar medical conditions. So it's always encouraging to see the VA, you know, and I know I'm a critic, but it is nice to see them reaching out and thinking outside the box because, again, as I said earlier, this treatment for such as PTSD through medication is just not the answer. We're just drugging and doping up these veterans rather than helping them and trying to give them some sort of opportunity to get back out and be productive. You know, when you dope someone up long enough, they're not going to be productive. And these other programs might, you know, afford them that opportunity. So that's just my thought on it, David. What else do you have?
No, I think that's a great point that we've seen, and it's not just our own anecdotal observations, but there's a lot of veterans out there across the country and other observers of the VA that have written about the issue of, prescribed medication And the VA is understaffed. It's not the VA's fault. And it's probably tougher for the VA to recruit when they get so much bad press as they have, you know, periodically. But they're understaffed, and as a result, you know, there's an issue of waiting time and not enough providers to help the veterans, and perhaps that provides some partially part of the pressure to rely more on just prescription medications. But that's not the only reason, obviously. More complicated than that. But in any way, on more of a you know, another perspective, as you know, you mentioned, and I'll elaborate a bit, which is this issue that they're studying right now. It's an ongoing study of how light therapy can help the brain heal from at least, you know, moderate or, you know, not terribly severe conditions of traumatic brain injury or even post-traumatic stress. And the VA's website at research.va.gov, you can learn more about past and current pending VA studies of the use of red and near-infrared light to see how that can help veterans. And one of the reports that I was reading talked about a researcher, Dr. Margaret Naser, who's associated with Boston University School of Medicine. She's a research professor of neurology there. She's also a research linguist and a speech pathologist. And if that's not enough, she's also a licensed acupuncturist and has conducted a lot of research on laser acupuncture to treat paralysis and stroke victims and pain and carpal tunnel syndrome. So she's got kind of a wide range of areas of expertise, but she has led research into the use of light therapy and studying how it can be used to help veterans. And what's interesting, because I've seen there are YouTube videos where you can watch interviews of Dr. Margaret Naser, and her last name is spelled N-A-E-S-E-R, talk about this, describing where the person, in this case a veteran, will wear an LED helmet, and they also wear goggles to protect their eyes because the near-infrared light, it's beyond the visible spectrum, can't see it, but the goggles are being worn to block out that light. And meanwhile, this helmet is lined with light-emitting diodes that apply red and near-infrared light to the scalp, and they also put diodes in the patient's nostrils to deliver these photons to the light photons to the deeper parts of the brain. So it's very fascinating. The light that is projected from this equipment is painless. It doesn't generate heat. Treatment lasts about 30 minutes. It's still in the investigational study stage, and it's not covered by most health insurance plans, supposedly. But it is touted by some as being a positive alternative to treat some of these conditions. And as Dr. Naser had said in a report, quote, "We are applying a technology that's been around for a while, but it's not always been used on the body for wound healing and treat muscle aches and pains and joint problems. We're starting to use it, but it's always been used on the body for wound healing and treating muscle aches and pains and joint problems. We're starting to use it on the brain," unquote. So that's where this is going. That's what's new about it. You may ask yourself, how do these diodes work when this person puts on this helmet and the helmet is emitting these light waves?
By the way, Dan, just quickly, just to throw in there, people who are listening to the show, if you can imagine something maybe out of the 1950s on the sci-fi, science fiction shows that you saw back then, that's kind of what this looks like.
You're describing a photograph.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a contraption.
Well, so anyway, but it's being studied, and supposedly it's had some positive results. Like most new things, it's not without its skeptics. But there have been published reports already that you can read on the VA website. But basically, if you ask yourself, how do these diodes work? Basically, this LED therapy, it increases blood flow in the brain. and they can verify that with MRI scans. It appears to have a positive effect on damaged brain cells, specifically on the mitochondria of the cells, and these are the subunits within a cell that put out energy in the form of a chemical known as ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And for those of you that are, you know, chemistry majors, you'll know far more about that than I do. But the point of it is that there are scientific reasons for this, for the effect that these light photons are having. They can penetrate through the skull into the brain cells and spur the mitochondria to produce more of this ATP, which is kind of an energy source. And the point being, that then translates into clearer, sharper thinking, according to Professor Nacer. So brain damage has been caused by explosions or exposure to pesticides or other neurotoxins, such as in the Gulf War. So that's why they're studying this on some of the Gulf War veterans as well, that it can be, this light therapy can be have a positive effect on repairing the damaged cells. So they're doing more studies right now. The research is not over, but they have reported some positive effects. And so it's just another example of where, in this case, university researchers working with the VA, along with researchers that are VA employees. For instance, this study, it's a VA-funded study led by Dr. Nacer's colleague, Dr. Jeffrey Knight, is a psychologist at the VA's National Center for PTSD and an assistant professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine. They're working together with other VA researchers to take a look on at how this LED therapy may help with TBI injuries, PTSD, et cetera. So stay tuned if you're interested in that and the developing therapies. Check out what the VA is doing. I think you'll be impressed that the VA is doing a lot of stuff. This stuff doesn't make headlines. It doesn't make the front page of your paper ever. From my experience, and I follow VA stuff diligently, but it's the information is out there. These people are not really getting the credit, that would usually go with headlines about what their research is doing. But they're laying the groundwork for future therapies that may allow veterans to perhaps move away from simply the here are your pills, come back in 90 days or six months for a refill.
There's another new treatment option, David, that came out, was announced by VA on November 29th. It will offer hyperbaric oxygen therapy, HBOT, as a treatment option for a small number of veterans with persistent post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, symptoms resistant to standard options. Providers from the Eastern Oklahoma VA healthcare system and the VA Northern California healthcare system will partner with HBOT providers at the Tulsa Wound Care and Hyperbaric Center at Oklahoma State Medical Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the David Grant Medical Center on Travis Air Force Base, California, respectively, to provide this care. There is nothing more important to us than caring for our nation's veterans, and that care must include finding different approaches that work best for them. Again, citing a comment from Secretary David Shulkin. Again, he says, we have to explore every avenue, particularly for our most medically vulnerable veterans, and be open to new ideas and strategies for their optimal health and well-being. HBOT is a procedure that increases oxygen in the body under pressure to encourage healing. Currently, HBOT is commonly used to treat carbon monoxide poisoning, diver's sickness, enhanced healing of some wound problems, skin grafts, heat burns, crush injuries, and other acute healthcare issues that involve too little blood flow to a part of the body. This use of HBOT for treatment of PTSD is considered an off-label use and will occur under the supervision of a trained physician. Separately, VA and the Department of Defense are planning a multi-site research study to examine more fully the use of HBOT for patients diagnosed with PTSD. As healthcare leaders interested in innovative approaches to care, the VA Center for Compassionate Innovation, CCI, is facilitating the use of HBOT for a subset of veterans who have noticed no decrease of symptoms after receiving at least two evidence-based treatments. CCI uses innovative approaches to treat conditions where traditional methods have been unsuccessful. VA will monitor the HBOT clinical demonstration projects and the HBOT research study to help inform the potential for HBOT usage to treat a larger number of veterans with PTSD. There you go again, David. You know, another example of the VA thinking outside the box a little bit, trying to come up with, as they said, more innovative ways of handling a very serious problem affecting so many of our men and women veterans. So we'll see how that goes, and it'll be interesting to see if we have some clients who are being given these treatment options and see how they respond to it, as opposed to the ones that we already deal with who are being provided merely medication, which by and large has caused problems for our vets.
And it's something that as veterans learn more about, and they can raise the issue of maybe expanding the scope of this treatment, these new therapies, these new emerging kinds of treatments, to more facilities. As you said, they're providers at just a limited number of VA facilities right now are examining some of these options, it's going to take some time. It's going to take resources, and it'll take money, but hopefully these studies will move along quickly, and if there's positive effects, then they can be used on a wider basis to help these veterans. We've covered some of the, just a few of the cutting edge issues for the VA. Tonight we've talked about this Decision Ready Claims program. I encourage veterans to, if they're listening, I encourage veteran service officers, I encourage VA employees that may be listening, share your thoughts, your insights about the effectiveness of this program. If it's a great program and veterans are pleased with it and it's allowing these new claims to be processed both faster and accurately, then that's a wonderful thing. And I think everyone will be applauding the VA for that. Meanwhile, it does appear to be putting a heavy burden on veteran service officers. The VA has claimed that it's trained them. They certainly haven't trained accredited lawyers in that. So we're kind of on our own. But my observation,
that has me a little skeptical about why.
Yeah, if I could add my two cents.
They have us on the outside looking in.
Yeah. The other thing, I think, Richard, you probably would agree with this, is our observations from cases where veterans have hired us to represent them on appeal, cases that were formerly handled by some of these veteran service officers. Some of the veteran service officers are brilliant. They've been doing these things for years. They're more skilled than you're going to find some lawyers out there. But at the same time, there's also a large percentage of VSOs. They're certainly well-intentioned. They may be working, they're working as volunteers, many of them, that it's not a full-time endeavor for them. But the VA the claims rules are so complicated, and they're perpetually evolving. We've seen a lot of cases that come to us where the VSOs have not done a very good job, and they've done very superficial work because why? They're counting on the VA to do what the VA is supposed to be doing. And now you've got this Decision Ready Claims program, which shifts, all the responsibility on these veteran service officers, on these VSOs. It puts all the burden on them. And again, I don't know what sort of training they've received, how thorough it is, but I guess time will tell. Again, we hope our listeners will share their insights about that program.
The other thing I'd just like to add on that, with regard to veteran service officers, is, and I hear this quite often. I'm not just, you know, think, you know, just trying to be critical of the VSOs, but I hear this time and time again, and that is that they tend to be dismissive of the veterans' claims, and rather than encouraging the veteran and helping the veteran, you know, to get a favorable result, instead they're told, oh, you know, you don't have a claim, it's just going to get denied, and you know, they then they come to us, and you know, next thing you know, we end up putting that claim forward, and we have success. So I get a little weary when I hear, you know, all this stuff about the VSOs, because my experience thus far after 5 years of focusing strictly on veterans law has not been encouraging when it comes to the VSOs. And so that's just...
Well, I think part of it is, and I offer this as my perspective as an Air Force veteran, is that, you know, when you've been in the military, particularly if you've served many years, and even more so in the cultures of some of the branches, that there absolutely is the culture which is you got to tough it out. You have a problem, you tough it out, and you don't complain, and you press on, you get the job done, you get the mission done. And, you know, Richard, you and I have seen this with a wide range of clients, from a client we had, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, who was a Marine recruit, 18 years old, and he goes AWOL twice from Marine Corps boot camp because he had just a extremely severe ear infection, which they were not properly treating. It was basically medical malpractice, and it was tormenting this 18-year-old to the point where he went back home. He went AWOL to get proper medical treatment. But he also talked with us about the incredible peer pressure of, you know, you're a Marine, you're tough, you don't go to sick call unless, you know, you are gravely ill. And as a result, you see that same culture among a lot of veterans, quite frankly, you know, and some of those veterans are VSOs, and that's why they kind of minimize or downplay a lot of disabilities. This isn't all, but I also see this, and I've heard anecdotally a lot of reports from veterans and even non-veterans, family members and others, particularly on the area of post-traumatic stress, because post-traumatic stress is a condition. In previous wars, it was called shell shock, battle fatigue. It had other names, and you know, strangely enough, back in the Civil War, it was called soldier's heart. That's an unusual term, but in any event, the condition has been around ever since there's been war, but it's only been basically since post-Vietnam where they put this label of post-traumatic stress, and the VA has put a greater focus on treating it but also compensating it as a disability. So a lot of things, a lot more issues that we're going to talk about in the next year. Tonight, December the 18th, is our last live program for this year, because next Monday is Christmas Day, and Richard Hurley and I are going to take Christmas Day off from a live show, and our show producer, Doug Newsom, will very graciously entertain our request that we will, for your benefit, be providing some enjoyable Christmas music for that day, for next week. So those of you that tune in to our show, Veterans News Hour, next week, Monday, December 25th, you'll be entertained with some hopefully enjoyable Christmas music. It's been a quick hour tonight. It's time for us to go. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on VBS Radio Station 1. We will be back with another live show on Monday, January 1st, 2018. We look forward to another exciting year ahead with a large group of interesting and informative guests. So until then, hope you have a safe, enjoyable holiday and a Merry Christmas. Good night, Richard.
Yep. Merry Christmas to everybody. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.